This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Houston, we do not have a problem.
Sarah Webb, Joy Drive's astrophysicist.
Hello, Sarah Webb.
Hello.
Sarah, I'm really excited, or I'm always excited to talk to you, but today in particular, because, you know, we talk about technology out there and how it's going to benefit us as humans, or, you know, it might be used for terrible purposes as well, particularly in space. So this is a really good story, and we're bringing the animals into the picture. I'll let you tell us.
We are. Yeah, this, I knew that you would enjoy this. This is a new story out of Africa, where they're using satellite imagery to try and help track and locate endangered populations of elephants to make sure that their movements are being documented and that they can figure out where they are. And so essentially, in the past, we've seen that elephants, when they're faced with drought, especially in certain nations, will tend to go towards people because they're looking for water. And that often ends in tragedy for both people and elephants. It can be really, really dangerous. And so one way that they're trying to help both elephants and humans live in kind of peace and have them both be safe is by using GPS to track the elephants and send out alert systems to populated areas to say, hey, there's a group of elephants that are heading your way. Be safe, be alert. The elephants are being monitored. But also, they're looking into using satellite imagery to try and predict where the elephants might be moving and could we help make their lives easier. And this just brings me such joy, this idea of using space to protect an endangered species.
And it also brings, I suppose, space technology, I was going to say down to earth, but, you know, to a whole new audience, doesn't it, who can use the data that it provides, not just astrophysicists and people doing research in space.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the most amazing things is all of these satellite imageries and different data that we're able to get from satellites looking back on the Earth can really help us in a range of things. So not only protecting endangered species, but understanding our landscape and protecting our forests and understanding changes left, right and center and all of the different things that we kind of take for granted sometimes is being able to monitor our planet so closely and how vital that is for us.
I wonder, that raises the question, doesn't it, about technology as it's developed, what other applications it could be used for? Because I'm sure that this wasn't designed to save elephants. It was obviously designed for space research or whatever other mechanism we use it for. But I think it's great because there's more potential perhaps that we haven't discovered.
Yeah, and I think this is why it's really important to have those community kind of discussions and even hackathons when you're bringing different communities together to say what problems are you facing and how could we potentially help you by crossing disciplines and crossing data and having that real community driven. We're all in this together, so how can we apply what we've already got or what we're designing already?
You're so right. And it's interdisciplinary, isn't it, about bringing people and bringing the arts in as well, because they often have the creative solutions.
100%. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, let's talk about someone who helped uncover one of the biggest mysteries in the universe, but most people have never heard of her. Who is she?
This is Vera Rubin. So Dr. Vera Rubin was an American astronomer, and you might have heard her name recently because we've just unveiled a brand new telescope in Chile named after her called the Rubin Observatory. And she in herself was an absolute powerhouse of a scientist. So she was born in 1928, and the year she was born essentially was the year that astronomers started to figure out that we've got galaxies beyond our own, that they were very distant galaxies and that they were moving away from us. And we really started to piece together what astronomy was. So in her career, she focused a lot of time understanding how galaxies rotate and inadvertently, as she started working on this, realizing that they weren't rotating how we expect because they've got way more matter than we can actually see. And we often call her the mother of dark matter. And so her work was absolutely fundamental in us trying to understand that there's a good chunk of the universe, matter-wise, weight-wise, that we physically can't see, and that it's hidden in the dark and that it contributes to the way galaxies form and evolve, and without it, it would be a very different universe.
Did Vera know that she would be like called the mother of dark matter, or was dark matter down the track?
I think there would have been a point in her career where she knew. Her and a couple of other astronomers really coined the term, not only dark matter, but a few other things that were happening in the universe and the way that the galaxies were shaped and rotating and clumping together. And so she was very, very influential in her life. And I think it's very fitting that we have this incredible new facility that is going to hopefully help us uncover more about dark matter and many other things in the universe named after her.
This raises a point for me, and that is, I feel like, and we should celebrate sports heroes, definitely, but I feel like we don't necessarily celebrate other heroes in the world as well, particularly like this one, Vera Rubin, and the work that she did. It's almost like, I don't know, is it nerdy or something? But we don't celebrate them. We don't give them that glory
we should. No, and I was thinking about this because I was reading a retrospective of Anna Wintour, so obviously editor-in-chief of Vogue, who has stepped down, and, you know, pros and cons of that career. But one thing that she did was bring actors and celebrities to the forefront of magazine and publishing, and having almost like the modern day celebrity be the spokesperson for different products. And it kind of spun out crazily through this Vogue kind of design around it. And I remember thinking, why hasn't anyone done that for scientists? Like, you know, and I think that's something that we see again with like sports people and with different celebrities. But also, I think it would be fabulous to celebrate all facets of life and the people who are extraordinary at different parts of life. And especially scientists, I think, are really interesting because a lot of the time they are unsung heroes, especially female scientists throughout the history as well. So it is, yeah, if we can celebrate more people doing good things, that's always a win.
Because you think about it, and it's not that there's plenty of pie for everyone in every field to be celebrated. So
yes.
You don't want to take it away. But if you think about it, we get up, we have a headache, and we might take some aspirin or some paracetamol, something that we do every day. Someone discovered that.
Yeah.
But it is. It's a simple thing that we all take for granted. We do it, but we never celebrate the hero who found it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we're getting better at trying to change that, especially in the 21st century, trying to highlight all of the different types of scientists that there are and the people who make things work and make our world what it is today. But yeah, it is really important.
Before we move on from Vera Rubin, how, I suppose, we've got the Vera Rubin Observatory in Chile. How does it apply to day-to-day, what we're, you know, the rest of us? How can we, I suppose, celebrate the achievement in terms of our day-to-day lives?
Oh, there's a couple of different ways. So with the Vera Rubin Observatory, one way that if you really want to celebrate with us and also contribute to science is that when the full survey comes online, I'm certain that there's going to be a lot of citizen science projects where we upload the data online to help people look through it with us, which is something that anyone can do, big and small, can help with astronomical tasks that way. There's also a lot of data already online like that. So you can Google Zooniverse and find lots of citizen science projects, not just in astronomy, but across everything from helping endangered species to protein folding to astrophysics, which is a big one. So that's always a great way to kind of celebrate how it integrates with everyday life, is helping contribute to the science behind the scenes.
We're chatting with Joy Drive's astrophysicist, Dr. Sarah Webb from Swinburne University of Technology. Now, I've saved the best till last. Well, not the best, but I've saved the one that has got me a little bit worried. And that is, it sounds like a bit of a sci-fi, but SpaceX has just launched disease-causing bacteria to the International Space Station. This sounds like it could get into the hands of the aliens. Tell us what's happening.
It sounds like the beginning of a horror movie.
Doesn't it?
But I promise you it is not. So researchers are sending up a few different strains of bacteria, including things like E. coli and Salmonella, to try and understand how they grow in space, how they react to being frozen and then unfrozen under microgravity. And the really interesting thing is that, especially for E. coli, it was one of the first strains of bacteria that was sent up in the 60s. Because we weren't sure how bacteria, how life in general was going to adapt to space. And what we ended up discovering was that a lot of bacteria tends to like it. It does quite well up in microgravity compared to us humans who don't do so well. Our body really struggles. And so it's always really fascinating the more data we can get on the way that bacteria and other organisms will react to microgravity. So this is, I'm very excited to hopefully see how these results go and what else we learn about these happy little bacteria and if they survive the very, very extreme conditions.
Now, we know that bacteria mutates and we've got antibiotic resistance happening out there in the community. Could these sorts of experiments, I suppose, shed some light on how they operate and how they mutate and other ways that we could kill them?
Yeah, they can. So one way that scientists are excited about using space and microgravity is to try and get bacteria to mutate faster or differently, just so we can understand it here on the labs and here on the ground. And it's the same for good and bad bacteria, trying to understand how it changes and why, and could we harness certain parts of it back here on Earth. There's a lot of research also going into the way that medicines, where that drugs are formulated, and could we use space to help those formulations be quicker or faster or more tailored to certain individuals and certain conditions. So it is fantastic. And I think being able to hopefully use space to have medicine be evolve quicker and to be more tailored to an individual is a really exciting opportunity that we have.
You know, what we've learned today, Sarah, is space helping the animals, but also space is helping all of us potentially. So we're not so far removed from the science that you and your team are doing.
No, we're really not. I like to think of that every day as, you know, space really does change our lives, and we're very grateful to have it.
Sarah, we're grateful to have you. Thanks for joining us. We'll chat to you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you for having me.
That's Sarah Webb from Swinburne University of Technology.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.